Hello, and welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans. I'm David Bailey, and over the past nearly 12 years, this podcast has taken on many forms, from interviews and audio diaries to cultural snapshots and expat reflections. You might notice some different podcast names mentioned along the way, but it's all part of the same journey, one that explores life, people, and stories from this fascinating region I now call home. If you're enjoying the listen, I'd love it if you left a quick review or rating wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps others discover the show. And if something in the episode sparks your interest or curiosity, why not drop me a message? I always enjoy hearing from listeners. I always reply.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pacinovic Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
It's An Englishman in the Balkans podcast. We have been dormant, sleeping, hibernating during the summer. I think the last proper episode went out in May. My goodness, it's a long time ago. But we're back, and we're starting with a pretty exciting story. I think it's exciting anyway. Why? Because I think there's a lot of parallels to my experience as well. But we're going to find that out because I've done precious little prep here. You know me, I wing it. There's a lady on Substack, and I'm on Substack. That's where my blog is. And I came across this lady and I thought, this is pretty interesting, because the thing that attracted me was her family name. And I said, that's a Western Balkan name, and it's on Substack, and it ain't too many of us here, so I have to get in touch. Today, I'm in the village here in Cidarcini, in northwest Bosnia. Camilla, who's the lady we're going to find out about now, is living, I believe, in northern Slovenia, very, very close to the Austrian border. Her name is Camilla Dugonic. She's also a lady that has come from the United States to this part of the world. She's going to tell us about that. And also, she's married to a bit of a celebrity, so we might find a little bit about that as well.
Thank you, David. Yes, I'm excited to be here and chat a bit about this weird life, this weird chapter of life that we found ourselves in. Who am I? That's a big question for a mom of two little girls. So I guess we'll start with that. I'm a mother. I am a writer. I've done many things in my life, career-wise. None of them have panned out as I anticipated that they would. Now I find myself in a very unique position, and I grew up in California, in Silicon Valley. So my upbringing was very much about success, career, progress, technology. You know, really, we grew up in the heart of all of the excitement, and my parents were very involved in all that as well. So for them, the idea that I have kind of turned my nose up at traditional career world, and I'm living in a tiny weekend house in northern Slovenia. So it's taken some getting used to in my family. But I met my husband, Damir, if we want to be correct, when we were in university at the University of California, Berkeley. And he was a tall, attractive swimmer, and I was a tall rower. And we kind of spotted each other from across the room, and we're like, oh, you know, there's some connection here. And when I found out that he was actually of Bosnian origin, his family is from Northeast Bosnia, I was very excited about that because we had some shared cultural shared culture, given that I'm half Algerian as well. So we got married young, 23. I was 23. He was 22. There was a need for a green card in America. And, you know, we got married young. And then we ended up moving to Slovenia when I was just 26, because he was training for the Rio Olympics and he was going to do that here. And we moved into this tiny house and prepared for those Olympics. And then we found out that we were pregnant with our first daughter, ended up moving back to America to become a mother because I thought that it would be easier to be surrounded by my culture and what was comfortable for me in that transition. And then 5 years in the North Pacific Northwest, I found myself just dreaming of this land and I couldn't get it out of my head. I couldn't get it out of my head for those 5 years. We built a house, we sold it. We sold 70% of everything that we owned and packed our animals and our two babies, and ended up moving back here 3 years ago. So now I find myself in a very unique position compared to all my friends. I have a good amount of time to do the things I like to do, and I'm finding that I'm loving writing. And so now here I am talking to you.
It seems that when you were talking about having come to Slovenia and then returning to the United States and having this dream, this pull of this region, I wonder if you have the same, or you would describe it the same as I describe it. When people say to me, what is it about Bosnia and Herzegovina? For me, and I always say, well, it's easy, isn't it? I mean, it's the Hotel California. I mean, you can check out, but you can never leave. Is that the same for you?
Yes. Yes. It's for me, when I first met my husband and started exploring this part of the world, I remember, I mean, I was 21 years old the first time I actually went to Slovenia and Bosnia, because we traveled to Bosnia quite a bit. And it was like growing up as an American, this might be unique to Americans, but we kind of think that anything east of the wall is this socialist kind of, you know, built. We just have this idea in our head of soup kitchens. And so I didn't even think about this part of the world really until I set foot in it. And it was as if like this mask had been ripped off my face and I could see, oh my gosh, this is the most beautiful land. These people are warm and open and kind. And I just, it grabbed hold of me. And once we lived here, it was like it became a part of me, especially my connection with the natural elements of the area that we live and the whole region of the Balkans, really. And so when I went back to America, I was missing something. It was pretty profound. And I felt quite empty while I was there, even though life was very, very full and busy. So yeah, I think it just grabbed hold of me. You're going to see one of my little Slovenian treasures here.
I have a lot of similarities to you, and I think we're going to realize that, but I want to do this from the get-go. My language skills after all these years, I mean, I speak very, very good German. I'll brag about that. Mm-hmm. But there's no way I could brag about speaking the local language of Bosnia and Herzegovina, which is always, are you speaking Serbian? Are you speaking Croatian? Are you speaking Bosnian? Which is a massive hurdle. And it's like a minefield here.
Yes.
And when I've talked to people about the former Yugoslavia, that, you know, as you were talking about, east of the wall nearly, and it wasn't too many years ago, somebody said, but David, there were three languages in Yugoslavia. And I, what? Yeah, there was Slovenian, there was Serbo-Croatian, and there was Macedonian. And I've had the pleasure to meet Slovenian guests here and also to hear them communicate in Slovenian, which is, I mean, mind-blowing for me. So how is it with you and your language? Have you managed to conquer any of it? Or are you like me? I speak, well, we'll say I speak Serbian, right?
So people say, what language do you speak? And I say Serbsklish, because it's just this amalgam of two languages, which I seem to get by with. How has it been for you linguistically?
Yeah, that's a great question and a very important one in the country of Slovenia. So I grew up speaking many languages. I spoke French as a child, took Spanish for 10 years, graduated fluent in it. That's all gone now. And then I met my husband and I started learning Bosnian because that's how his mom communicated to me at first, was in Bosnian. She doesn't speak any English. Most of his family don't speak any English whatsoever. So I quite quickly picked up some basic Bosnian to communicate. And then once we had made the choice to raise our children here in Slovenia, I really decided that I had to tackle the Slovenian language. And the Slovenian language is unlike anything I have ever attempted in my life. I mean, it's on the list. I've read lists where Slovenian is one of the top five most difficult languages in the world to master. There's a lot of rules and there's many, many, many dialects in this country. I mean, like, it's a very small country of 2 million people and one town to the next will speak differently. So I learned that quite quickly. I was going to need some professional help, got some classes. And I would say that I can communicate in Slovene. I have a thick accent from the region that I'm in, which is a little bit, I would equate kind of like the American South. I'm sure there's in the UK, there's many accents across the UK as well, but it's a very thick and strong accent. The rest of Slovenia kind of laughs at us in how we speak. I'm very insecure about it, but I'm assured by everyone around me, wow, you speak so well all the time. They're just very happy that someone's attempting to speak their language because it's so challenging. This dialect has a lot of German in it, actually, because we're right on the Austrian border. So there's a lot of German sounding words or even German words, like a house here is Baita and a chimney is a Raufang, and the rest of Slovenia would not understand those things. So it's probably the biggest challenge of my life in living here is the language, language and driver's license, because that's a whole other saga. But the language, it's a fun challenge. I hope I master it someday. I really like look forward to being able to communicate well. But to be honest, it's a deeper question for me, the language issues, because I feel often that that's been the biggest transformation for me in moving here, is that I've lost my one of my tools in life, you know, you can't really charm people as easily when you don't, the banker, the guy who's, you know, helping you plumb your new bathroom or whatever it is, like you can't have that banter and that discourse as easily. And I had to learn quickly to find other ways to communicate with people and connect. But the language is tough. I mean, And my other biggest problem is that I speak some Bosnian. And so I often throw in the Bosnian word instead of the Slovenian word. And I'll get some looks sometimes, like, because the Slovenian language is precious. It's very precious to them. And I think it's because it's a small country and it means a lot to them. And so I do my best, but I wouldn't say I'm great. I wouldn't say I've mastered it.
You don't know how much that has meant to me listening to that, because I'm here on my own. And I I can get by, right? My restaurant language is great. And like you, the family that I have been part of, right, there's only one young girl. She's got 20 now, she is. There's only Victoria and my wife that speaks English. Everybody else, well, I've just got to get by. Having said that, two or three glasses of rakia, you're getting there. It's like a help.
It flows.
It does. What do you think has been, apart from the language, the biggest, maybe culture shock is the wrong phrase to use, but I'll say it anyway. What has been the biggest cultural difference for you from coming from the United States to this, and I do say this honestly, this pretty unique region?
Yeah, it is a pretty unique region. There's, I mean, on a maybe on a certain level, being a mother in this region, coming from America, I have very different ideas of what is healthy, I suppose I would say. For example, and to my in-laws' credit, they have done an amazing, amazing job of accepting me and my ideas, all my crazy American ideas. My children are barefoot frequently and very rarely wear caps, hats when it's cold, and I let them have wet hair, which is almost illegal, it feels like, sometimes here, and I get in quite a bit of trouble. People ask me questions about this all the time. So there's some shallow things like that where, you know, yeah, okay, we disagree on, like, promaha. I don't know if you guys call it promaha or promaya, but, you know, the wind. And
hey, funny you should say that. I was going to ask you that because in 2 days' time on Substack, there's a video that I've made about zrak and promaya. So what, we won't second guess that. But how has it been? You know, you tell me what your experience has been with promaya, because I mean, it's going to be pretty unique for people that are watching and listening to this.
Yeah, for me, promaya is a little bit. So my husband was a big believer in it until he came to America for university. And he just, I remember his mind being like, so none of you are scared. And I was like, no, the fresh air and wind is a good thing. It's a good thing to have cool air, you know, a nice cool breeze on your face or on your neck even. And he just, his mind was blown. So he came back telling everybody, it's not true. It's not true. It's not a real thing. But I think, I don't know if I actually agree with that, because I think that it really depends on how you grow up, what you believe, what your body's used to. But for me, I get a lot of, I mean, still to this day, if I even look like I'm going to sit on the ground in certain months of the year, one of the uncles will say, get up, you're going to get sick. And so I've had to kind of be like, no, I'll be okay. But there's stuff to be learned from that as well. And I try to keep a bit of humility with it. We just are, there's a very different, you know, view of health. And then on that same note, I feel like a lot of people here are far more connected with nature and natural forms of healing, you know, tea from herbs in the garden or mushrooms from the forest, or, you know, I really appreciate that and learn from that as well. So I think there's a lot for me to learn from it. I still struggle with the idea of zapate. I'm not a big zapate wearer, or papucha in Bosnian. But on a deeper level of the cultural change, I would say it's the American in me. Everyone likes to tell me that Americans are fake. That's a big question I get. Why are you guys so happy? You guys, it's fake, right? It's fake. You seem very cheery and you talk to the people at the grocery store. And it's those things that have been the most difficult for me. When you go to ring up your groceries and the teller doesn't have a conversation with you, a quick little bit of banter to make your day sweeter. Those are the kind of culture shock moments where I have to stop and be like, whoa, everything's okay. She doesn't hate me. I'm going to be okay if I don't get that little bit of, you know, fun throughout the day with strangers. People are a little bit more closed, especially in Northern Slovenia, in this specific region of Northern Slovenia as well. And I find a different experience when I'm in Bosnia, though. I will say that there are changes from region to region and country to country. And so I think that's been my biggest challenge, is learning how to connect with people without the overly flamboyant, I don't know, our overly flamboyant essence that we have in America. And I think that it's been good because there's genuine connection, and I've evolved as a person, so I can't, it's taken some time to get used to it.
Yeah, well, I don't want to disappoint you, but 22 years down the line and I'm still going down that route. By the way, here, the English, we are looked at as being uber cold. You know,
really?
Yeah, we don't show emotion. You go to a funeral, and I just stand there, and they go,
yes.
I said, you know, in my culture, You know, if some everybody yeah. stands there quiet, everybody doesn't say anything, and the most you'll get is if a guy, if it's his best friend, he might wring his hat in his hands for yeah. a little bit. But yeah. the show of emotion yeah. is an amazing wow. show of weakness for Northern Anglo-Saxons in from where I've come from. So, Camilla, you're this rower, right, in California.
Yes. Yes.
And you come to Slovenia, you're in a Vikendica, a weekend house. From the photographs on your publication and what you write about, I mean, it's nothing more than idyllic, really.
Yes, it is. I mean, I pinch myself often. It's idyllic in the one sense. It's very picturesque. We have a massive garden that I've put a lot of work into, and we grow an amazing amount of food. We are at just shy of 900 meters altitude, so it's a challenge to grow food this high sometimes, but I've just really loved that challenge. I have time because I'm not chasing the hustle and bustle of my old life, which was very busy, very stressful, very money driven. And now we've chosen to live this simple life. But I mean, so idyllic, yes, but sacrifices were made, many of them, and are made on a daily basis. When I compare my life to some of my friends back in the States, you know, we don't have a dishwasher. We grow all our own food for the most part, much of our own food. We store it in our root cellar. So that's a lot of work in the summer for me. We forage a lot of what we can't grow, and our meats and, you know, our beef comes from our neighbor's farm, and I butcher it into the cuts myself. So I've had to learn how to do that. So there's a lot more work involved in our daily lives. We make our own juices. We don't make rakia. We get rakia from Bosnia, but we make our own juices. And, you know, much of what we consume is my labor. And then, of course, I cook it all myself, and we have our own sourdough bread. And, you know, it's idyllic, but it's an idyllic situation that takes a lot of work and a lot of letting go of what I thought was important, like Amazon Prime, for example, 1 to 2 day delivery. That's not going to happen here. Sometimes the postmen, sometimes the delivery men don't even want to drive up this hill. And so they'll just say, I don't want to come up today. I'm going to leave it here, or I'll come in a couple days. And so all the conveniences of my old life were stripped away. Also, a normal sized home with 2 children and 3 animals. We have a very small house and a very small kitchen, 1 bathroom for all of us. And I just like, there's a lot of hardship in that I think a lot of people would not be willing to experience. But for me, if that's the cost of the freedom that I have to talk to you right now, or grow my garden, or go into the woods and grab a basket of porcini, and really, most importantly, above all else, to have time for my children to be present in their lives, I'll take it. And I really think that living in the small house has made me just a better human. Again, growing up, I'm from San Francisco. I mean, I was born in San Francisco, California. So the standard of living that I was, you know, chasing when I was younger was extremely different from what I have decided is what is right for our family now. And I'm just really grateful that I got here. I don't think I would have ever come to this place mentally about, you know, this is a much deeper subject, but about my goals and dreams in life and what actually matters to me, if I hadn't come to this part of the world and had kind of just my eyes opened to a very different way of living. And I'm really happy that we do it. I'm so grateful for it.
Your children are growing up in a lifestyle that you would never have even countenanced when you were their age, right? This would never, ever happen. How do you describe to them the differences in when you were a child of their age and what they're experiencing now? I mean, do they see your life, your previous life, if I can put it that way, as being something that they will never experience?
We left when my oldest was 4, about to turn 5, and my youngest was 5 months old. So I'm not sure how many memories they're going to have of their old life, but they know it exists. They've seen the pictures. They know what house we used to live in. They know that we used to work, full-time jobs and barely see them. And I think my kids, I talk about it a lot, probably to their annoyance, but I never stop reminding them how rare this is and how lucky we are to have this lifestyle, in part because we were brave enough to choose it and because we were lucky enough to have the option to choose it. That's a big part of this. I know a lot of people don't have an out of the rat race, but we were pretty brave to let go of everything that, we had and we knew. But my children, to them, I mean, it just seems so normal. Like, they drink herbal tea that I harvest from I write a lot in my Substack about how much I love a weedy garden full of, because all the weeds are the good things in a lawn, the clover and the dandelion and the wild thyme creeping through. And there's so much goodness in what seems to be something so common. And I just love that they know that they drink that tea every night without question. And that they know that mommy's going to go out and pick, it's red clover time. We got to go pick the red clover. They seem very just, it's like, it's natural. They don't fight it. And I will say, we're a bit unique even in our area for how we live. So I think that, they know that kids live different ways. They know that other kids can, buy a lot of candy from the store or watch, TV during the week, which we don't do. And I'm a bit of a strict mom. And they know those things. They're aware that their life is different than other kids, but they seem to understand it. And just my oldest, who's almost 8, explains to her friends, oh yeah, my mom doesn't let me watch TV during the week. I read books, I go outside, I play. She's just kind of, that's how it is. This is how it is. This is what we've chosen. And I think it fits them. It suits them. She's also, I will say this, she's an expert mushroom hunter. I mean, she would rather go hunt for porcini, yurchki, as they're called here, any moment of any day than play games or, be on a tablet or anything like that. She's a bit wild. And I love that about her. And I'm glad we've given her the option to explore that.
What a fortunate young lady she is. On your Substack, you're documenting everything that you're doing with your garden and your property, down to having, even in a tiny house, if I can put it that way, you have a gym. I mean, come on, you've got some luxuries there. And we'll talk about the sauna in a minute. But the thing is, how difficult is it for you to articulate in your Substack, with all those beautiful images that you have to color your pieces? It must be physically exhausting to do all this work on the land, and equally mentally exhausting to take all that information, all those experiences, all those emotions, and put it into the posts that you write so eloquently. I mean, the storytelling is amazing. But how difficult in the real world is that to achieve?
I've always had a lot to say. So I used to kind of channel it in being a bit too, maybe, so, I don't know in what ways it used to come out. But I have found that, especially since I started this specific project, I've been writing for, I've been documenting my life for 15 years now. Much of my old work I've made private now, because I wanted to open a new chapter with this project and really focus my everything in this. And I've also had to get rid of all of social media. That's a big part of my experience, is getting rid of all social media except Substack, so that I can actually focus on the work that I'm doing. And while I'm doing all that physical work in the garden and in my kitchen and in the forest, I'm paying attention to what's happening. So, I always am like paying attention to the stories that are unfolding. When I wrote a piece recently about wild thyme, and how wild thyme here is it's a very important herb. It's called Materina Dušica, which translates to mother's soul. And I have this experience in my life when I smell thyme it reminds me of my mother because of how she cooked, and my grandmother as well. And so while I was picking the time and thinking about, I spent my time thinking about, oh, this reminds me of my mom. The story kind of comes together in my head as I'm doing the work. So that's what I've found has been a really, the most rewarding experience of this Substack adventure and this specific project, A Year of Good Work, is that the story comes to me, the wisdom that I'm seeking come to me while I'm actually physically doing the work. And I feel like it's something pretty powerful for me. I don't know where it's coming from, but sometimes it doesn't always happen, but there are times when I'm in the work and I feel, okay, all the pieces are coming together in my head. So I do the work and then I go write the story right after. So yeah, it takes a lot of effort, but I have to get it out. You know, it would be almost painful to hold on to those, you know, the story that's piecing together in my head. It'd be almost painful if I couldn't write it down and share it.
Social media, which you said about leaving behind. I've done that, but I haven't gone back, but it was a time sucker. It just like took a lot of things away from my life. But when you look, or let's think, when we remember being on social media and that platform called Instagram, which always gave these picture perfect views of people's lives. When people read your Substack, and I'm going to put a link to wherever this is, either video or audio, when they come and read your Substack, it does show this really wonderful life, but you have had some setbacks, you know, when you were doing composting at one stage, and you could tell through reading it that you were exceedingly disappointed, maybe to the point of crying, maybe to the point of, I need to leave this. For a bit. Do you feel, I mean, most people that use social media just look and try and portray this picture perfect life, as I call it. But you do show a lot of vulnerability. Does that make you feel insecure, or are you strong enough to say, I don't care what people think? Because that's something I do struggle with. When you have vulnerabilities, I always try to find a way that I don't show it too much. Whereas I think you are a pretty open book. How difficult is that?
Yeah, if anything, I try. My struggle is to contain it. If anything, I've worked in my life to find a way to keep things a little bit more sacred, which is, I think, why this project has been so rewarding to me, is that I'm able to pick and choose. Whereas social media feels like kind of an onslaught, like you have to participate so frequently, and it's not very well thought out necessarily, at least not how I did it. And I felt like I was always trying to match up to someone's expectation of, you know, what looks good. Whereas with Substack, I'm having an experience with it where I just share like the truth of my life, the truth of my day. My life, my daily life is very beautiful. It is very, very beautiful because we live on this mountain hillside with an incredible view, and I'm surrounded by stunning nature. But when you read the words, you can see that I've, you know, battled postpartum depression deeply, and you know, being a foreigner in a land, struggling with the language can be quite lonely, quite isolating. And I have faced a lot of my demons in this experience. And I think that that's a really valuable thing to share. I think that's actually where like the juice is in life, and really the good stuff, because that's, I think, how we connect better with one another. And that's, you know, oh, I see that I've struggled with that feeling as well. How did you get through that? Oh, you use this technique, or now your words take on a different meaning because I know that this is what is feeding them. This is the experience that sort of guided you there. So I think vulnerability is really important. I need to learn how to, and Substack has helped me with that. I need to learn how to keep certain elements of my life sacred. My children are a big part of that. Like they make me who I am, but I'm not really open to sharing their faces online anymore. And I had in the past on Instagram, which I have since deleted everything. But I just, yeah, I think it's a much more thoughtful platform and a much more thoughtful, like it takes time. You have to think about putting together a piece and what you want to share. And I find that the community on Substack is a million times kinder as well. I mean, really just excited about life and hearing people's stories. They just want to read stories, at least the community that I've become a part of. And I'm so grateful for that platform. I was doing the project on its own website initially before I moved it onto Substack. And I was hesitant to go on Substack because I thought, oh, I don't know if I want comments or anything. This is such a personal project for me and it's very important to me. And I wasn't sure I wanted input or feedback. But I found that it's actually served to inspire me even more, and more stories are coming out, more things I want to share. So we'll probably end up be doing another year of good work. So I'm really excited to keep that going. But I'm so grateful for the platform. I don't know if you found the same experience, but it's a special place.
It's certainly different, and it suits me. I'm not a writer.
Yeah.
I'm a hobbyist, but for me, it's great. Do you know we're just using S words today? Slovenia, Substack, and two that I want to get out of you now. sourdough and saunas. How many people in Slovenia have saunas when they have big houses and you've got a sauna, which looks like the cutest, amazing thing in the world, right on your property? What made you want to have a sauna? Because saunas and the Balkans, I just don't see the connection there.
Yeah, well, Northern Slovenia, where we are, we're in a region called Koroška. In English, it's Carinthia, and part of it extends into Austria as well. And several of my neighbors have saunas in their basements. And, you know, the health spas in Slovenia all have saunas. So I would say Slovenia might be a little more open to the practice of saunaing. More than I've seen in Bosnia. Most of our Bosnian family members asked if it was a meat smoker when we were building it, because it looked like a meat smoker, and I think that is the priority. maybe one day if we don't want to do it anymore, it could turn into a great meat smoker. I've been diagnosed with Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune disease that affects your thyroid. And I've been dealing with it since I was pregnant with my firstborn. And I can't tell you, it's my body craves the sauna. It was one of our non-negotiable items when we moved back. We're like, sauna, we have to do a sauna right away. And my husband is a former Olympic swimmer, but after he retired from swimming, he built houses for 5 years. So he had the skills to do it himself. And he chose a little spot on our property, and we've got a big window, and the view out of it is incredible. And I pinch myself every time I'm in it. I mean, I cannot believe that it's ours, because it's such a sweet little structure, and the view is incredible. And I have a garden bed right below it that I plant strategically for me to enjoy the view out of the sauna as the things grow. And actually, amazingly, this summer, I planted a big row of sunflowers, just expecting to enjoy some sunflowers. But what it's turned into is this like bird party, and all these little birds are there all day long picking off the sunflower seeds. And so I sit in the sauna and I just stare at them, preparing for the winter, the same way that I'm preparing for the winter by filling my root cellar with potatoes and the squash from my garden. They're doing the same thing as me. And I just sit there and I can't believe how cool it is. And it's a really wonderful time of reflection. It's a bit of a physical challenge. And when there's snow, it's extra fun because we jump in the snow afterwards and probably make everyone around us like lose their minds thinking we're crazy. But it was a great project. I think everyone should build a sauna. I really have I'm a very pro sauna advocate.
I'm going to try and persuade Tamara to do that. Although I think her parents, who are pretty conservative with a small C, they might say, David, you know, you're gloopy at the best of times, and maybe this isn't one of them. But one of the things that I was taken as well, and I said to Tamara, look at these pictures, is the skill that you ladies have, and gentlemen as well, in making sourdough bread. I'm always fascinated what people can do with a razor blade inside that dough before they put it in for baking. Sourdough seems to be a passion with you as well, and you've had your ups and downs with it. Was it something that you brought with yourself from the United States, or was it something that you decided to take up when you came here?
I started making sourdough bread right when I had my second daughter. So we were still in America. I had been making a form of no-knead bread for a long time with commercial yeast, but sourdough felt really liberating to me because you don't need anything. You really just need flour and water and the beautiful wild yeast in the air around you. And I found that to be a large part of what I do is that I really like the feeling of freedom and non-dependence on, or a very limited dependence on, the systems around me. And so sourdough fits into that very, very well. And I had a couple friends who were doing it, but it took me a really long time to figure it out. And it's taught me a lot. I wrote a piece about how sourdough bread tames your ego, because you think you have it mastered, and then, you know, something happens to your starter and it's just like, oh, no, we're going to, you know, we got to adapt. And so you kind of, there's many people who claim to be masters online, and there are so many people who are amazing at sourdough, much better than me. But every time it works out for me, it feels like a miracle. And I have so much fun with it because it's just so exciting. I mean, I've been doing it for, you know, 4 years now, and I just, every loaf is like, oh, how? It's magic. You know, I worked with these invisible yeasts and I created something that's so good. So my children are a bit spoiled when it comes to that. They're pretty snobby when it comes to their bread. And that's maybe a slight mistake I've made, is only giving them that. But it's really healthy. It's much better for our guts. And it's fun. It's really, really satisfying to do it well. And when you don't do it well, you can still eat it. You know, you cut it up for stuffing or croutons or breadcrumbs or just, but it's a good lesson in patience with yourself, you know, consistency. I've enjoyed it so much.
Does your sourdough starter have a name?
It doesn't. I know most people's do. Mine doesn't. I got my starter from a neighbor here. So there are a lot of people here doing sourdough as well. Especially in the countryside. I need to give her a name.
Yeah. Tamara's is called Chica. I don't know why, but she wanted to call it Chica. Kimberly, there's a lot of similarities between us. I know that. I think people that consume my content, if that's the right phrase still to use when it comes to Substack, but nevertheless, know what I am. But I'm going to ask you this question. You've got three options here. So what are you?
Okay.
Are you an expat? Are you an immigrant? Or are you an in-betweener?
Oh, that's difficult. That's quite a question. That is quite a question. I think I'm an in-betweener. I wouldn't describe myself as an expat or an immigrant. I think I'm an in-betweener, and all the room that gives me. I feel a bit like an anomaly most days. You know, I'm kind of the one who stands out a little bit here. I remember one time I was walking down the street and my husband drove by, and we were down in town, and I was walking somewhere. He saw me walking somewhere, and he called me and he said, "You look, what's going on? You have a smile on your face. That's so weird." And I was like, "Why is that weird? I'm walking. The air feels good. I just have a little smile on my face." And I had noticed that people kept looking at me as I was walking. And once he drove by and said, it's because you're smiling. It's like, you look a little crazy here, you know? And I've that's stood out to me a bit, that I'm always gonna look a little crazy, a little different. So I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever fully, like, mesh with the culture here entirely, but I certainly don't feel very attached to my Americanness anymore. So I'm not sure. My parents also, I should say, my parents have moved. They're now in Trieste in Italy, which is about 3 hours from us here. And it's a very, very unique city in Italy with a lot of Slavic influence. And sometimes I hear more Serbian there than I do Italian when I'm in that city. It's a wonderful city. And so I don't have much back home anymore, you know?
I go back very rarely now to the United Kingdom, and yeah. I read somewhere, and it resonated with me, is if I ever did go back, I'm not going to, but if I ever did, I would be totally lost. A lot of people from the United States that have been in Europe for a long period, and when they've gone back, they said, now we are totally lost. We left what we knew from the United States, and we spent 20, 30 years in this other country, got used to the culture, assimilated as best as possible, and then for some unknown reason went back and they said, now we're totally lost because we're nothing now. We can't even identify with our country of birth. So for us in-betweeners, I'm an in-betweener, for us in-betweeners, we are pretty unique, but it does carry a certain amount of emotional turmoil, or it does for me.
Yeah,
I'm not one.
Absolutely.
I actually like being in the middle. I actually do like being in the middle because I've got the richness of what I had, and I've got the richness of what I'm living.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I feel like it's a more for me in my experience as an in-betweener. Now I can confidently say I'm an in-betweener as well, and I feel for me that it allows me to live a very authentic, and I don't love that word because I think it's been overused in society, especially in like wellness. But in this case, it really applies. I think that this in-betweener status allows me to live an authentic version of myself. I am authentically me here because my language skills aren't, you know, I don't want to say manipulate, but I can't use them as well as I would have in the States. But, you know, I get access to all of this new information that I didn't have in the States. And so I feel like it's raw. It's raw and it's real. And I think that position that I'm in of rawness at all times, you know, allows for my writing. I think it's really helped my writing because I have to come from an honest place. There's nothing I can pretend to be. I can't pretend to speak the language perfectly here. Actually, you know, I can't, at this point in my life, we have issues with my driver's license here for 3 years, but I can't even drive very, very far. So I've had to just really settle into myself that I am my home in a weird way. Like I belong where I am. And that's been a really huge lesson in my life. And I'm grateful to have learned it. I'm 37. I'm going to be 38 in February. And I just feel like it's such a big life lesson. That one, I am my own home no matter where I am. And that allows me to take the richness of anywhere that I am without needing to identify with it too much.
I know that your children go to school and they're on morning shift, so they'll be coming back soon, and they deserve all your attention. just as we wrap this up, residency for a stranac, for a foreigner in Bosnia and Herzegovina, is a minefield. I shouldn't really use that word because of the past, but nevertheless, it is a difficult thing to navigate, even when you're married to a citizen of the country. Has residency for you been easier than you thought, or more difficult than you thought, or was it as you thought?
So the first time I moved here and got my residency, that was before I was a mother, before I had my children, it was much easier because my husband was employed by technically by the state. Athletes are employed by the state. So it was much easier. This time around, he's self-employed and it's a lot harder. And so as a result, we've had to kind of navigate those waters, and we've made that work. Healthcare and everything, it's a pretty simple system here. But the hardest part has been this issue with my driver's license. There's a date on it that they won't accept, even though it's a valid American driver's license and they should just transfer it. But there's something in the system that won't allow it. And so I have to do a, it's called CPP here. I don't know. It's basically a very big process that all young, you know, kids starting to drive, they do. You have to go through a theory class for 2 weeks, all in Slovene. It does not exist in English, especially not in my region. And then you have to pass a first aid test, all in Slovene. So I've done those two things, had to do it completely in the language. It was very challenging. And then now I have to go take a theory test in Slovene. And then I have to do 21 hours of driving behind the wheel and then a driving test. And so it's pretty crazy. And anyone who I talk to here that knows that I'm doing this, they can't believe that they're forcing me to do it. So there's been some challenges this time around that I wasn't expecting. But for my children, it was smooth sailing. They are Slovenian citizens, and they just meshed right into the system, picked up the language quickly. And it's been a bit harder for me than I was hoping for.
As we wrap this up, because you've got to go, on your Substack, your Substack was about a year. Mm-hmm. And what is your immediate future, or the plans as far as Substack is concerned? You alluded to the fact that you might take it in to year two. Are you of a mind to take this story and let people follow it along, or is it something in your mind that, no, this is finite, lako noć, do vidjenja?
Yeah, I mean, I think my initial goal was to turn the year into a book. And I was hoping to gather enough wisdom from my efforts, my toiling, you know, in the soil and in my kitchen, and this really physical work that takes so much love. I would really like to turn it into a book, A Year of Good Work. And my initial plan was it would just be a book for my children, that if anything were to happen to me in life, or even not, if they just want a bit of their mother's soul, going back to wild time and Materina Dušica, you know, if they just want a bit of their mother's soul in a book, here it is. Here's what I've learned. Here's what I believe in this phase of my life while you're little. It was going to be a gift to them. And that was the initial plan. And so that I definitely want to do, but I think I'm enjoying the process so much of sharing these stories and learning and evolving as I do the work. I don't plan to stop doing this work anytime soon. I hope I just have dreams of me as a little old lady with my cane and, you know, still going out to my garden, just like I'm surrounded by them up here in the hills. And I find them, they're the most amazing people, are these little old women who still work their land. And that's my dream in life. So I will keep working. I'm going to keep writing. I think we might start doing some video, but I have some things to learn about that. But I want to keep it very honest and sacred and raw. So that's my plan for now.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pacinovic Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans. So that's it for this one. Thanks for keeping me company. If you enjoyed the episode, maybe share it with a friend who might like it too. And if you've got thoughts, questions, or just want to say hello, you can always reach out. Also, if you'd like to support the podcast and help me keep telling these stories, you can drop a little tip via Buy Me a Coffee. The link is in the show notes. Even a euro or two makes a big difference. So that's it then. Take care, and I'll catch you in the next episode.